So, hallo zusammen. Sieht man mich online irgendwie? So, ich muss mich, glaube ich, so stellen. So. Ja, freut mich sehr, diese heutige Veranstaltung eröffnen zu dürfen. Mein Name ist Isabel Otto, ich bin Professorin für Medienwissenschaft hier und aktuell Gleichstellungsbeauftragte der Universität. Insofern, dieses Thema Diversity Gaming ist uns ein besonderes Anliegen, weil wir hier an der Universität immer wieder schauen, wie können wir noch mehr dafür sorgen, eine inklusive, diskriminierungsfreie Kultur herzustellen. Und da haben wir an vielen Stellen noch viel zu tun. Das wissen wir, dass das immer wieder hakt und nicht gut klappt. Und gerade so eine Veranstaltungsreihe ist wichtig, damit wir sehen, wie in unterschiedlichen Bereichen dieses Thema eine Rolle spielt. Und gerade im Bereich Gaming sind Formen von binären Oppositionen, Diskriminierungsformen, sexuelle Belästigung, ein großes Thema. Eine Welt, die lange Zeit sehr männlich dominiert war. Also Gamergate ist uns allen immer noch ein großer Begriff. Und umso mehr brauchen wir andere Taktiken und Strategien und wir erhoffen uns viel vom Queer Gaming. Und deswegen freue ich mich ganz besonders auf den heutigen Vortrag von Jasmin Bieber. Und jetzt, now we switch to English and I pass over to Christina.
All right, so we thought to make it easier for Yasmin, we would like to do the introduction for her in English as well. Also, I do not know if there are any English speakers online or here in the room, and I would just like to introduce Yasmin as our speaker, which I'm so excited to be here today and to open up this series of events regarding diversity gaming. So, as you may have seen from the posters, today we are talking about queer gaming on the 7th of December. I would be really excited if there were a similar amount of people there as well when we are going to look at empathy, ethnicity, and embodiment with a talk from Marco Jeftic, who is also online, who we might hear later in the discussion. So just to give you an overall overview over how this entire event is going to look like today, we are first going to hear a talk from Yasmin, and then we will be able to play the games that are in this room right now. So we have two laptops with unpacking, we have the large switch with unpacking, and then two stations with dysphoria. We will try and stream unpacking for any online participants. Also, since dysphoria is a browser game, you are able to play it as well if you want to play yourself and not just watch. And then afterwards, we will have a discussion. So we should be able to work with our room microphone here today, but we have quite a few of technical difficulties, so bear with us if there's any problems. I would also like to say that, as you might have guessed by the large camera in this room, we are recording this event both online and in here. However, we will not record with the large camera the discussion, but we will record it via Zoom, just so everybody's in the know. If you do not want to be part of this, then you're aware of it. And then, thank you so much again for a quick introduction. I would like to tell you a little bit more about Yasmin because she is not usually part of the game studies. Her PhD project is actually focused on 18th century women travelers, their identity formation and geospatiality. And she's also very interested in digital humanities. However, Yasmin keeps being a guest lecturer at Game Lab events, for example, the colloquium or this event right here. And I'm so excited to be hearing this talk today. And now there might be some rumbling while we switch over and then the presentation can start. And thank you again for how many people showed up here today. I'm really excited about that.
This is so on point for today because any kind of technical difficulties that could have happened. And so this is why I cannot express my gratitude enough towards Christina and everybody else, Marin, Feli, Selina, her crew, and a special thanks also to Isabel Otto, who initiated the series, invited me. You can come <It's fine. laughs> for inviting me because we have gone now through a lot today, but also throughout the last terms. And yeah, I'm very grateful to just have this platform to talk about a topic that is, as Christina mentioned, not my PhD topic, but something that really lies at the heart of my own identity, because I'm queer and I'm playing video games. And so it's exciting to think about how these two facets come together, and especially how they come together in ways that might be different from queer literature, queer movies. So what I continuously think about while playing, while experiencing also this media, is how might this be different? Not in a particular positive or negative connotation, but just different. And how do I grasp this differentiation? And that was the starting point of the ideas, these very broad thoughts that I want to present today, because I don't want to take too much time away from your playing experiences. So this will be quite short, quite brief, but hopefully it might provide some thought-provoking ideas or concepts that I would very much welcome you to discuss with me afterwards. So my starting point is not really a game, but rather something that is recently very much debated in the game world, namely, okay. I was just waiting a moment, pressing the button in a moment. But rather, it is a widely discussed topic, namely that the famous Legend of Zelda series is supposed to receive a live-action adaptation, probably as an answer. A lot of you are nodding. Thank you. Wonderful. You're aware of that discourse. Probably because of the popularity of the animated Super Mario movie. However, there has been a lot of questions regarding how is this supposed to be translated into live action. And one particular point that especially came up in queer online discourses has been the protagonist and the actor who is supposed to play the protagonist. And I have to thank Christina for making me aware of some of the tweets. I just want to show you them in the quote. No, okay. Oh, thank you. Oh my God. Namely, and I need to quote this, and this is a almost infamous quote now, where somebody raises the concern of, you will never find a twink androgynous enough to play Link. And there's a whole website dedicated to this factor of, why can't I think of a single actor that could play Link? Maybe we need to find a new twink of the month. And there has been a tendency of these tweets, particularly with this queer lingo. And an aspect that I want to really to highlight, to accentuate here, is androgyny. And naturally, an easy answer for this androgyny might be that we look simply at the design and at the tradition of this design. Link is not really your typical knight in shiny armor. He's not really muscular. He always wears this tunic. He has, because of his elven features, they are rather delicate and precise, not so much. And also the longer hair, somehow throughout the series, this hair gets longer. So he does not really appear, you know, as very typically masculine. And the recent installation of the series, Tears of the Kingdom, accentuated that even further, to allowing the player to for Link to wear different outfits. And I would say they are on a very hard line of arguing that these are typically masculine-coded outfits, right? So this is one aspect. But I would argue that there is a second major part to this perception of the androgyny of Link as a character. Why so many people argue this character is so androgynous, so much not really, I mean, he is officially Mace's listed, but so many people feel this androgyny cannot be translated into the physical world. And I would argue that this also has to do with the player, with us. Because we, as we play Link, we bring to the game our own gendered identities, right? And this is exactly the facet that I want to focus on today. And for that, I want to start not with the game, so we need to step back, and rather look at gender studies. And I mean, gender studies is a major field, so I just want to point out very, very specific aspects that I found relevant for this case study. This is just a screenshot from a Pride Parade earlier this year, where somebody says, I identify as what I am, not in any kind of gendered matrices, not in any kind of preconceived notions of gender and sex. I identify as myself. And this really lies at the heart of Judith Butler's text, and Butler again drawing from Simone Beauvoir from very early on, that the fact that it has no essence of gender that is expressed, it's not externalized, not an objective ideal to which gender aspires, because gender is not a fact, and it conceals its own genesis because of these repeated corporeal habitus that we all repeat, and in which we try to find ourselves in, or also define our own identity. So just to summarize some aspects, because that is very quickly gender 101, what I want to highlight here is that gender is in fact a reproduced, crafted, cultivated system. It's a system, it's performance, it is socially constructed. And for Judith Butler, they point to the fact that neither gender nor sex should determine one's identity. Again, back to this quote, I identify as what I am. What is important is not my gender, or it is not the essence of my identity, but rather one part of the large mosaic that is myself. And there's one facet that is our starting point when we want to approach the video games and queer video gaming, namely the body. Because through this theory, the body turns into this relativized object that can be formed, and we are aware of its deliberate transformation. So I want to set up this body, in the physical world. This is our starting point. Now I want to take one step further. With Gay Weiss, coming from phenomenology, arguing that, or trying to make sense of the world from a non-Cartesian or an anti-Cartesian way of thinking, arguing that the world actually only exists because there is a body, and the body only exists because there is a world. It's a sort of an hen and an egg problem where, nothing existed before the other, but rather it is created, as he calls it, or mediated by our continual interaction with other human and non-human bodies. His work pretty much stimulated, or is one of those staples of this concept of intercorporeality. Intercorporeality basically means that we make ourselves up through bodily experiences. So our body is important for these experiences, but also through any kind of interactions. Social interactions, of course, interactions with other bodies, but also interactions with the world, with non-human bodies. He has this very vivid imagery, for instance, of a feather that we find in our way, and we decide to put up the feather and put it in our hair. So the feather basically becomes part of our own being, but we also become part of the world. We sort of merge with the world through the interaction of with this object. Okay. So now, and this is the, and then we have crash course theory. I want to focus on the most important case study that I found particularly enticing, namely A Play of Bodies by Edward Keith, who takes up this idea of Weiss and translates it into the cyber, into the video game experiences. And his idea or his agenda is to understand how we perceive games and how we can feel games. And he doesn't mean that in an affect way, but rather in the sense that I can say, oh, I press this button and it feels heavy to lift something as an object up in the digital world. I can use the arrow keys to maneuver, and it can feel very slick, or it can also feel very heavy, much like a strenuous. He is much concerned with the question, where does that sensation basically come from? And he takes up this idea of intercorporeality, of our constant meaning making and creation of knowledge through perception, through this interaction with the world. That is also true for the human and the non-human body, from the actual world into the digital. And that we, in this interaction between the actual and the digital world, create something meaningful. So let me explain this further. We have this, what he calls a cybernetic assemblage, which means for him, it's not so much that there's a rigid differentiation between the player body and the body we see on screen, but it's more important what is created through the interaction of both bodies that come together. And he calls this an augmentation of the player's body. And he is very much, you might recognize some of these phrases or some of the terminology from Catherine Haley's Posthumanism, as well as Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto. So he's very much also inspired by this. He says, when we approach a video game, and it's the body at the video game that is created through this interaction, limbs are wrapped around the controller, extended through the screen, senses become heightened and muted, identities, abilities, literacies, perspectives are taken up and put aside, flesh integrates with plastic, and code turns into what is highlighted as literally cyborgian. The last part we don't have to take into much consideration. I'm more interested in this, what happens with our bodies, which he describes in this enwrapment, which naturally doesn't happen. We are not just entangled in like cords, but what does he really mean with that? So basically, his understanding results, I will never learn this, what he argues for is that rather to look at two distinct bodies, we look at action that results from this interaction. This is what he calls the player's amalgam embodiment. And this emerges through playing the video game, but it also enables the video game. So for him, there's no video game without the player's input. There is no player without the video game, which seems pretty, I mean, obvious. Somebody has to play. That's kind of obvious. But he says the interesting thing that happens here is that we need to focus rather on this interaction and what happens through the player's engagement with the game, as we, for instance, our eyes become something more than just our eyes. That we see more through the screen. We press play, we hear more as we engage with the world. We feel the buttons through our fingers. And something in this action is what he describes as this sensual experience that celebrates our senses, our feelings that emerge through this interaction. He further argues then that the feedback loop, because we have almost humanoidic understanding of why we are playing, between what we need to do to, for instance, progress in the game, and also learning more about the game, that this feedback loop is partial, distributed, and emergent. And that is important. It is an important statement for video game studies, because he positions himself in this perspective that every video game experience is unique. We seem to think that because those are chords and the video game functions just on a very basic structure, that we can always again and again go through this very same way, but he argues it's never the same way. There's always something different because we are different as we are engaging with the game. We become the cyborgs. And the cyborgian identity is something that continuously develops as we play games. And so basically what emerges is that we extend the body, we started, you know, with the body here, the physical body as a relativized object, beyond the material divide into the digital. And you also quote him again, this is taking up some of the arguments that I just mentioned, but I thought it might be great to have this perspective again in his own words. He says there is a cybernetic understanding, or this cybernetic understanding that he promotes, of video game play does not leave the player's body back in the actual world by focusing on events of an insular virtual world. Rather, it focuses on the meshing of materially different bodies into an amalgam cyborg body through which the player both produces and perceives the play experience. So this again illustrates the point that I also just tried to make. What I want to highlight here is his use of the plurality, that there are different bodies that are important for this cybernetic assemblage, for this embodied performances. And because there are many bodies involved, from my queer perspective, you know, I question, but what happens with gender in this enmeshment? Or is there even gender happening in this enmeshment? And where, if so, where do we need to locate it? And what might this approach have for what kind of benefits or just different kind of perspective would this approach offer to us if we look it from a queer perspective? And I can just offer two perspectives basically that are work in progresses, because again, this is not really my main field of subject, but something I'm just interested in extending and expanding further on. I would say because we have different bodies that do not disappear, we have no conflation of bodies, but a multiplicity of experiences that we gain. We have the opportunity from this perspective that neither the player disappears into the player character, neither do we disappear into Link, but also Link is not us in the sense that it's always still the player and nothing else, but rather it is a combination of both, but also not in the same time, because here we focus more on the action that results from this interaction between these two elements. So to bring again back this to Link and the aspect of androgyny, I would argue that this androgynous character is so much so because he is such a prime example of having a personality, but also not talking and being much a mirror or enabling us to mirror ourselves into the game world, which means that we can then also apply our own ideas of an identity which brings with it a gendered set of expression. And I believe this is why it's so, for many people to think it's so difficult to imagine this character becoming just one singular person, because he's so many people at the same time. I would also argue that exactly because we decenter the body as a stable locus, we gain the opportunity to put our own identity aside, which does not mean that because of a video game we can simply switch our gender identity, but it is not the primary focus, which I believe hinders so much conversation around video games that are so strictly focused on, well, this is exactly the kind of gendered identity that is represented. But when we look at it from a phenomenological perspective, we rather look at the opportunities of experiencing and enmeshing and trying to understand a different expression rather than having a strictly representation of one gender, one person that we perceive, for instance, very distantly from our screens. Because we are involved, we become the cyborg player, we become augmented through this character. So I would argue it is much more complicated than that, and any argumentations who would put these into very rigid notions do miss out on so many fascinating enmeshments and processes that could be created through these interactions. So I hope this provided a brief insight into my theoretical thought process that it's again still ongoing. And I want to briefly illustrate to you or briefly explain to you how, and also in correlation with these ideas that I just presented, you have now the opportunity to play two games. Particularly Dysphoria is an indie game from 2020 produced and developed by one person, Anna Entropy, who is a trans women scholar and also a video game developer. And she translated her own experience as she was going through hormone therapy into a video game experience. It's an autobiographical journey. It's just a few minutes long. It's not only in terms of context very queer, but it's also queering gameplay. And it's I don't want to say too much. You can check it out. There are several, as Christina said, several computers available. And also those of you who are at home, you can just Google Dysphoria and you will find the browser game very easily. The second game is Unpacking. No, my packing is a bit longer. we'll probably not play through the whole game, but it's nonetheless also a fascinating, very much queer experience of a person. And basically, the gameplay is about unpacking this person's life again and again. Each time a new chapter of their life starts, literally a new level starts, and you get to take up the objects that they bring to this new apartment, their new home, and put it where you believe it belongs. And there's an interesting aspect of that sometimes the game will tell you, no, this is not where this object belongs. Then you have to figure out where it belongs instead. The one on the Switch, I played the first two levels, so you get into the more interesting parts. So feel free to use the console if you will want to really quickly get into the game and experience it. Okay. And before I let you test out the games, there are a few questions that basically I want you to take with you. Not so much that these necessarily need to be the questions that we then use for the discussion. I'm very much encouraging an open conversation or open talk about whatever kinds of terms you might take up from the presentation or just anything that you might be interested in correlation to that topic. But these are more questions inspired by this phenomenological, this intercorporeal process, or how to understand video games through these processes. You could ask yourself, how are my senses really involved in playing video games? I mean, it's an audiovisual medium, naturally, so eyes and ears naturally are involved, but how are they involved? How do I see into the game? Do I particularly focus on some details? Where are my eyes drawn? What happens with my ears as I'm particularly watching at the, or hearing, not watching, hearing the sound effects of dysphoria? Do I associate myself with the characters? We have two very pronounced characters in these two games. Do I perceive or treat them more as my personal experience? Do I put down these objects into a room, or am I always aware that this is another person that I am playing as? And what happens through this process of gradually learning more about this character? Do I become more the cyborg player, how Keogh calls it, the player and video game circuit? Is there a connection? Is there a lot of movement, action that creates new forms of knowledge? Or is it rather that I distance myself because I learn more about this character and they can become more pronounced and I understand them more as their distinct person? And the last question is very much inspired by the fact, and this was not on purpose, but we actually choose two games that neither have a classic third-person perspective nor a first-person perspective, but rather something in between. And I haven't realized that until we decided on these two games. We don't really see the characters. Does that matter? Because bodily experiences are so much about physicality and disability. And here we have two experiences where we don't see the character. So what happens here? How do I know who I'm playing as? And what kind of signals do the game allow me to perceive or to read that makes me understand that? How does this disembodied interaction with the game world works? And I honestly don't have definitive answers, particularly to this question, but I found them absolutely fascinating, and I'm very much welcome to any kind of ideas that you have in this regard. So that would be basically it. Maybe one last thing that I hope that you take away from this short input is the fact that from this phenomenological queer perspective, whenever you press play, you already move beyond a variety of boundaries, real and virtual. You move beyond the boundaries of your own body by interacting with another. You move beyond any social restrictions and binary matrices. I just hope that my short input made you aware of these processes. So thank you so much for your attention. These are my sources. And yeah, I hope you all have fun playing the games. Thank you.
Das Spiel entwickelt die Story erst im späteren Teil, ist das so?
Genau. Und also am Anfang begleitet man eigentlich nur diesen Umzug und denkt sich erstmal so, vielleicht, ich glaube, das ist auch der Punkt, wo die meisten Leute aussteigen.
Also es war der Punkt, wo ich dachte, toll, ich kann Sachen sortieren.
Ich meine, klar, wenn man genau so rangeht, dann ist es voll klar. Aber wenn man so nicht so viel damit zu tun hat, denkt man sich so, okay, ich mache jetzt mal Pause jetzt? Und dann geht man nicht mehr rein.
Ja.
Wie und voll. Wenn dann diese Story sich so beginnt zu entfalten, ich glaube, das ist so ab dem Punkt, ich möchte jetzt nicht spoilern, aber ab dem Punkt, wo es eine ganz spezielle Wohnung ist, die sehr, ich sag jetzt mal, maskulin konnotiert ist.
Ja.
Ich glaube, ab dem Punkt wird einem dann klar, wohin die Reise geht.
Ja.
Ich glaube, ich habe mich
bei einem Spiel mit so wenig Dialogsequenzen so über einen anderen Charakter aufgeregt, den ich noch nie gesehen habe. Der kommt auf den Schreibtisch, oder? Der
Toaster. Ja, klar.
Ach so, das ist ein Poster. Oh,
ja, das ist auch so cool, dass die Sachen so eine Persönlichkeit irgendwie auch haben,
ja,
wenn sie sich zusammenrollen oder nicht sind.
Das ist richtig cool gemacht. Ich finde es auch cool, dass sich die Bücher so aufstellen.
Du kannst aber auch hinlegen und so stapeln.
Oh.
Mhm.
Die Wohnung hat mich so gestresst, die war so klein.
Ich war gerade am Überlegen. Ja. Da. Okay. Das ist wirklich eine sehr interessante Art und Weise, den Körper zu schicken. Gott, da kommt jetzt auch so die Sims-Spielerin in mir raus, die so ist, von wegen, ich will die Plakate schön an. Das
ist wirklich zu lang. Ah, die Katze ist auch mitgekommen.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Ja. Okay.
Ja.
Ah. Hast du noch hier hinschreibt?
Die hat so viele Hobbys.
Ja, wirklich. Ein Hobby. Aber ein sehr großes. Ja, gut.
Geht der Kühlschrank auf? Bestimmt nicht, oder? Ah, schade.
Wann ich das mal was essen. Ach, das ist ein Gummibänder. Warte, kann man... Also, das ist ja keine gute Idee.
Ich laufe mal durch die Reihen.
Ja, ja,
ich weiß, die anderen machen.
Du hast die Erlaubnis zu sagen, wenn du denkst, nein,
ich finde, du machst das super.
Perfekt. Tastatur in der Küche. Also, ich bin begeistert. Okay. Oh, I think you have a problem now. Beep, beep, boop, object. Oh. Okay, da kommt das mal. Kommt das mal zur Küche rein. Warum nicht? Ah, wahrscheinlich die Leute, die das dazu schauen, sind und was macht. Ha! Da geht es so. Aha. Perfekt. Das Beste ist, genauso sieht mein Schreibtisch aus. Schon alles voll. Ich mache nicht mehr in die Figur rein, weil du ja weißt, was passiert.
Ja, du hast dich in der Version erlebt. Genau. Dann ist wahrscheinlich
das so. Einzelnes Messer. Perfekt.
Genau.
Also zum Beispiel, wenn ihr... Hm? Nochmal? Achso. Ja, danach. Ja, alles gut. Ich bin beschäftigt. Ach, das ist ein Dosenöffner. Ich auch sicher. Stimmt, ich hab hier auch. Ja.
Doch,
ich wollte gerade sagen,
ich dachte
gerade
an Helmut, weil ich habe
meine Mama
in
meinem Tuch.
Und krass, da muss ich
mit meinem Tuch.
Oh, und da ist der Zeichen
doch, ja.
Gekommen
von einer halben Stunde gefühlt.
Ja. Guck mal.
Das ist das, was ich meinte. Die Küche ist zu klein.
Ja, aber wirklich. Da muss man richtig. Muss man richtig überlegen, wie man es machen will. Kann ich das doch? Kann man nicht.
Oder mit den Sporen.
Hm. Okay. Okay, Sugar kommt hier hin. Passt immer noch nicht. Okay, ja, die ist wirklich deine Linie. Oh, ich habe nicht gesehen, dass da oben auch noch was ist. Weil die kleinsten Teller kommen einfach nach oben. Das ist eine verwickte Logik, finde ich. Wow, okay, jemand mag es sehr salzig.
Alles gut.
Die wollen einfach nur
jetzt alles zumachen.
Ja.
Ich glaube auch, die Games sind richtig gut. Ne? Ja. Also, wie gesagt,
das
ist gar nicht.
Oh, das ist cute.
Stimmt, das ist auch mitgekommen.
Ja. Kannst du den?
Nee.
Ich auch nicht.
So vielleicht eine Seite, wenn es gut läuft.
Ja, ich kann nicht mehr das. Ich habe eine Freundin von mir, ist mega gut. Die hat versucht, das mir beizubringen. Hat nicht so ganz so gut, aber. Ich finde die Bilder so geil.
Sie haben bestimmt selbst gemalt.
Ich glaube auch. Ich meine, schau dir das an.
Ja.
Was
ist dieses Lieder, ne? Du hast vorhin gemeint, das, was jetzt neben dem Sparschwein steht.
Neben dem Sparschwein?
Das ja. Hier? Ja, was ist das?
Ein Kassettendeck.
Ach so. Ja, klar, gut, 19. Irgendwas 19.
Ja. Nee, ich glaube, das ist ja 2004, aber macht
trotzdem. Ah, 2004, ja, gut.
Ich hätte jetzt gedacht, für so Spiele, halt für CDs.
Ah. Ja, stimmt, sie hat jetzt einen CD-Player.
Vielleicht auch CD, aber als Musik dachte ich immer zumindest.
Ja, nicht. Ich habe es irgendwie nie richtig erkannt. Dieses?
Ich finde das schon mal
durchgucken.
Ich finde das
irgendwie
voll entspannt. Ja, aber ich bin auch ein großer Sims-Fan. Das heißt, wenn ich Sims spiele, ist es bei mir
Sims. Sims ist aber schon Spaß.
Macht schon sehr viel Spaß.
Für mich heißt es so Tee.
Ja, verstehe ich auch. Oh nein.
Ja, das stimmt, ich glaube nicht selber.
Niemand ist ein Schlauch. Solche Shots verschwinden bei mir immer unter ganz, ganz vielen anderen Pullis. Oh, das ist aber süß.
Ich lasse jetzt
einfach
alles.
Ja.
Und dann, wenn du alles ausgeräumt
hast aus den Kisten, seid ihr die Spiele in Sachen irgendwo
falsch liegen. Genau. Aber wo hier richtig ist im Prinzip. Wie cute. Das passt nicht so ganz hart, aber. Oder? Das habe ich gerade auch gedacht. Zu feminin.
Ja. Aber spannend. Hey. Warte.
Das
war die einzige
Bewegung.
Oh, das glaube ich. Das war die einzige Bewegung.
Ja, genau.
Oh Gott, noch mehr Schlagzeug.
Wo ist
Okay, der Fußball muss weichen. Oh mein Gott, da unten kann man auch noch was hinter.
Das hat man halt vorher auch nicht gesehen wegen den ganzen
Autos.
Kannst du mal probieren, auf den Wecker zu klicken? So wie vorhin auf die Puppe. Kannst du die Uhr einstellen?
Schauen wir mal. Ah, ich glaube nicht.
Ach, schade.
Schade. Wäre witzig gewesen. Wäre sehr lustig gewesen. Aber sowas ist auch immer richtig cool. Ist das schon so unterschiedlich? Da bin ich dann halt auf den Gefühl. Wie heißt
danach? Okay, weil auf jeden Fall keine Dummheit scheinen.
Nein, noch mehr. Noch mehr Unterwäsche. Okay, ich muss jetzt hier runterweichen, sorry. Da kann man die Knöpfe damit drauf. Nee. Es gibt immer so Sachen, die triggern mich, wenn sowas so weit vorne steht.
Und da kommt noch eine Unterhose, okay.
Klopapier. Ach, da ist auch noch.
Ja, ich habe das Gefühl, das wird jetzt noch ein paar Mal.
Oh, okay, noch eine. Ah! Hä, aber ich finde das süß. Ich glaube, ich mache die da jetzt mal. Ich finde das so cute. Oh, auch noch mit, dem Smiley, das ist ja richtig niedrig.
Also mir geht es genauso wie dir. Ich habe das Spiel auch so gerne gespielt. Ich fand das super entspannt. Ich fand
ja, das ist halt so eine. Vor allem, ich finde, es ist auch voll schön gemacht. Es hat halt alles so ein bisschen seine Persönlichkeit. Ja.
Ja, meine Mutter saß irgendwann mal daneben mir, als ich das gespielt habe. Und dann ist sie irgendwie so hängen geblieben. Und wir haben dann währenddessen darüber diskutiert, was denn gerade so in ihrem Lesen vorgeht. Und
bei ihr?
Ja. Und haben dann, also haben voll gemutmaßt, um uns irgendwie diese Story zusammenzubasteln.
Oh, aber das ist doch auch cool. Aber das ist halt. Das ist halt immer cool, wenn Spiele schaffen einen so zu fesseln, finde ich.
Mhm. An der Tür ist ein Haken.
Oh, ich sehe die Haken nicht. Die fallen mir nie auf.
Ah ja.
Das ist der Grund. Okay, das ist ein sehr kleiner Bild. Das ist so kleine. Eine Pfanne. Okay. Okay, krieg dich noch in
Du kannst aber auf dem Herz starten. Da bist du aber schön voll staubt.
Warte. Ja, auf dem Herz ist besser. Kann man zumindest was mitmachen. Oh mein Gott, warte. Kann man sie hier aufhängen? Oh! Das finde ich süß. Das mache ich so. Okay, damit ist der auch weg. Dann ist der letzte und dann habe ich es. Oh, das ist das, wo man so einen Namen schreibt. Okay, let's see. Was war falsch? Oh! Okay, war das irgendwie. Ist das hier oder so? Oh, okay. Anscheinend war ich da doch ein bisschen zu entspannt. Alright. Sind die jetzt alle hier runter?
Ja.
Weil die BHs sind okay, aber die Unterhosen.
Das geht, die muss man verstecken.
Ja, genau. Aber was ist denn so? Aber gut. Der kann. Und. Ja, ja. Ist hier sonst noch was?
Aber du hast oben links jetzt Platz für den.
Stimmt. Dann. Ha! Perfekt! Oh.
Schalte?
Ja.
Cute. Machst du 5 Minuten?
Ja.
Das
kann man
machen.
Ja.
Ah, jetzt sind wir in der WG.
Oh. Okay, Speedrun wird das noch die nächsten 5 Minuten.
Ja.
Okay, komm, warte, sag ich doch. Das ist unkompliziert.
Ja.
Nein, gar nicht. Nein.
Oh, da sieht man die Tasse.
Rückenschrubber.
Das ist so cool.